Now getting an update on what's actually going on with the current release of Samba. So Volker Lendecke, Samba core team member and one of the founders of Sternet, and so one of our hosts here, is going to give us an update on Samba 3 and the next step there. So please welcome Volker. Actually, he already did a short address, so you don't need to welcome him anymore. Already did that, so have fun.
Yeah, can everybody hear me? Anybody not able? Okay, wrong question. Are you asleep? Can so I hope everybody can hear me now. This Samba XP, I get the impression, is a bit of a Samba's trade show. I mean, tomorrow we're going to see quite a number of talks, Jeremy Allison, Lars Müller, about what Samba has to offer these days. I want to give a little bit of an overview what you can expect with the next release, in a bit more detail than Jerry did. And I'm going to focus on what I have done to the current code. And I think a good share of those 100,000 lines have been mine. So that's what I'm going to talk about. First slide. Okay. I have to update this every year. I mean, it's now 15 years. It's a bit, I think it's already 16 or whatever. I think I read my first GNU manifesto in 1989. And yeah, last century. Jerry talked about our update rate, and I just want to have the exact lines. What I did was completely non-scientific. I checked out all the releases that are actually in Subversion. Nothing before 303 is in Subversion. And I didn't really bother to go to the CVS tree to check out the older ones. What I really find stunning is that from 303 to 314, I didn't look at the letter releases. We had 100,000 lines, and we topped it really with every single release that we have more development going on since then. So something has happened. I mean, the only one that got less, from 3021C to 3022, I think it was only a one-liner, a single debug message that had to be corrected. Sorry, you're sitting here, so whatever, happily. Fun? It was a password in the log files. So between 3021C and 3022, it was actually a one-liner. But during the whole development series, 3021, we accumulated 14,000 lines. But above that, yeah, we are doing quite a number of updates. As Jerry said, we updated the complete open code to be a bit more cluster aware. We redeveloped WinBind completely. We are in the process of finishing that. And what I'm going to talk about is that we updated our way to handle user IDs and group IDs completely. And that's going to be the main topic that I'm going to talk about. I'm always asking myself, what has happened? Why has it been revitalized so much? And maybe it has to do with people getting new jobs and fun. may I say that loud? No. Okay. You might ask Jeremy at the party after two or three beers or so. Essentially, people gained interest again in Samba 3, and it was partly that we have seen bigger and bigger installations. So, for example, the WinBind rewrite was due to some demand. I mentioned it this morning in the tutorial. I had an environment where there were 400,000 users, and we had to trust 96 domains, some of them being somewhere behind an ISDN line in Japan or so. And so you just cannot afford WinBind sitting there waiting for enumerating 1,000 Japanese users just to authenticate a local user to the domain controller that's next door. So that had to be rewritten. And we are really seeing larger and larger environments. And so this really inspires that we have to update and we have to fix stuff. If it ends up that we rip out central parts, then be it so. I hope we do it for the better. This essentially is a list of the what's new.txt of the release notes of Samba 23 or 23 pre-1. And this is an overview of what I'm going to talk about. We have this offline mode in WinBind. We have Kerberos support, and we talked about that since this morning quite a bit, why we are doing it and how we are doing it. What Jeremy is going to talk about is we have non-root share management tools. And then the big update, which I think makes at least half of what's between 3.021 and 3.022 and 3, is that we have a new handling of unmapped users and groups that essentially results in that we have way improved support for local and built-in groups. So what's WinBind offline mode? When you look at normal Windows workstations, they are completely qualified domain members. So on a domain controller, you can't really tell the difference between a domain member server and a domain workstation. And when you log into a workstation, all authentication by default is online and goes to a domain controller. This is particularly true when you have NTLM authentication. So when you go, and Andrew just told about that, when you log on to a file server, you give it credentials to the file server, it has to go online to the domain controller. So much of the Windows security model really depends on that you have online connection to your domain controllers. And the problem here is, what do I do when I take my laptop home and I want to go in and have my local login and have my work environment, have my desktop environment? What I essentially need is that I need to be able to log in without having to ask a domain controller, because usually there's no network around at home. And what Windows does in that case, it caches credentials. So you're logging in using password VL, user VL, password, whatever, secret, and it caches this somewhere on disk. And when you go on later, it may take a while, it may take a bit longer, but then later on it says, okay, let you in, you're logged in with these credentials, and you get your local desktop again. Yeah, good addition. I did these added this functionality. I think, what's the current brand name for this desktop product? Sled, okay. Okay. Okay, yeah, that's... I mean, whatever that product is, it's a box that you can install on your laptop and take home and log in. That's the idea. What's still unsolved, and I hope that it eventually will be solved, is the functionality of offline folders that Windows also provides. Sooner or later, we're going to have to do that. How do I get my /home then? I mean, there have been ideas with some abandoned projects. Is anybody still working on Coda? Nobody is working on Coda, which exactly did this. I think it's a spin-off of AFS that was improved to allow local file server to locally cache files and then later on update the server copy of it. And that's essentially the idea that you would need to take your laptop home. I think they have this concept of harvesting, wasn't it? Was it called harvesting? I mean, gather everything that is in my home directory and have a local copy of it. We need something like that at some time in the future that corresponds to the Windows offline folders. But then /home isn't really solved so far at all. We have Kerberos. We have put Kerberos into PAM WinBind. Normally, if you log into a Kerberos domain, you do it with PAM curb 5. Windows typically issues so-called renewable tickets. This means that you go to a KDC, you get a ticket that lasts for a work day, 8 hours, 10 hours, maybe 24 hours. So this blob, this binary, whatever, ticket is good enough so that you can persuade other servers, I am Volker Lendecke. And this ability lasts for 10 hours, whatever a workday takes. But it is also possible to use this ticket to get an extended version of it for the next day. This means that I don't have to type in my password. The machine could do it automatically. I don't have to type in my password again, but I have to do it. Why was this done? I could go and say, okay, this ticket is valid for a week, but then I have a security problem, or a month, or whatever. So I somehow get notion of that ticket. This ticket has been compromised, it has been stolen, and if it's valid for a complete week or a month, then this ticket, whatever, every single application server in my network is, in theory, would have to be informed about this. What I can do with renewable tickets with quite short lifetime is I could inform the domain controller or the KDC, this ticket has been compromised. So the time when this compromised ticket is on the network is really short then. I mean, maybe 10 hours, maybe even less. So if the domain controller is informed that this particular user has a compromised ticket, it would just refuse to update the ticket to get a new ticket with the existing one. That's basically the reason why they do it, and normally nobody takes care of that credential cache, so these tickets just expire and nobody really takes care to get new tickets based on the old ones. And now Winbind, that's a long-running daemon, that's going to take care of getting new tickets. Who has been sitting in the tutorial this morning? We had quite a bit of discussion about having the password. Winbind right now, as it stands now, stores passwords, users plain text passwords, because Windows not only does this, what I'm describing here, Windows actually caches the user's plain text password, or an equivalent of the user's plain text password, to reacquire new tickets beyond the complete renewable ticket lifetime. And we have code right now that exactly matches this. So it's a bit against whatever pure Kerberos standards, but it's what Windows workstations do. And as Jerry said, we have no shame in completely replicating that. We are right now ironing out the details how we can do that as safe as possible, as secure as possible, so that we don't really have to put plain text password on disk, never. This is a preview of Jeremy's talk. One thing that Windows does is, if you're a member of the power users group, then you can create your own shares on your workstation. Right now, as Samba works, you need to be root on your local workstation to create shares. Jeremy added user share parameters that allow a normal, non-privileged user in a limited way to create its own, his or her own shares. See Jeremy's talk tomorrow in the technical track. Basically, this is all. I mean, normally in a Linux environment, you would expect that users have root on their local workstations. But when you roll out whatever, 1,000 or 10,000 Linux workstations, this assumption doesn't work anymore. That you have knowledgeable users locally, and that you have users with root privilege locally. And all these improvements that have been done is to really allow a workstation with non-privileged user and have all the functionality you would expect from a Windows workstation. So, now let's get to whatever my toy that I put into Samba 3 or 23. Let me skip two slides. No, three slides. Four slides? Whatever. Last slide. Release notes of 303 said we have support for local groups, whatever a local group is. And I think we have to really educate our user community what a local group is. The problem is this never really worked. It worked in some very limited cases, but yeah, it sucked somehow. And last year, a large customer of mine actually wanted to put this into production with user manager working, with cluster failover, and I figured out that, okay, we have so many bugs, we have so many problems in that, that I really had to go in and fix it. And this turned out to be larger than I had expected in some way. But famous last words, how hard can it be? So, what do we have? Samba has to solve a couple of basic problems, and many of these problems really come from Samba being in the middle between Unix and Windows. So a lot of translation has to be done. The simplest, one simple problem, for example, is that Windows does not make a difference between capital letters in file names and lowercase letters in file names. This is easy to explain. And for example, backslash and slash as a difference between as a separator between directory path components. A more complicated one is that Unix is using small 32-bit, or in former times it used to be 16-bit numbers, to identify users and to identify groups. Windows does the same. With Windows, they are called security identifiers. Jerry has also already talked about S1532, S1521, and then a whole bunch of digits. Essentially, what we have is we have 128-bit user IDs and group IDs in Windows with some semantic differences. For example, when you have a SID, you can never tell whether it's a group or whether it's a user. You always have to ask somebody. And one of the problems is, what do you do when you do not know who to ask whether this particular SID is a group or a user? So if there's nobody around, this is just a blob that you have to start somehow. This is just one of the problems we have to solve. I mean, we have already discussed whether we could get Linus or the other kernel guys to put 128-bit user IDs into the kernel, but I don't think they would really appreciate that. Just to, yeah. I mean, 32-bit UIDs for everybody seems enough, but I think this is one of the areas where Microsoft did a good job in making large-scale system administration possible. For example, what Unix completely does not solve is you have two huge installations, two companies merge, they have their Unix ID allocation, and you want to merge both. This just doesn't work. In Windows, you have three mouse clicks, enable a trust, and everything just works due to this huge number space with 128-bit user IDs. So we have a couple of places where we have to map those. And when you look at the code until 3 or 22, it's messy. And Jerry just said this is a euphemism. The problem is, when you look at all the Samba books around, mine included, nobody really explains it. And this is due to a reason, because you cannot explain it. It's too complicated, and we have many, whatever, irregularities in there. We have fallbacks, and we have really potential for conflict, for conflicting maps. So, for example, it's very easy to map one Unix ID, one Windows ID to two different Unix IDs, or vice versa. We have one Unix ID that is mapped coming from different sources to two different Windows IDs, and this in all places leads to chaos. Where do we map SIDs to Unix ID, or how do we do that in general? Normally this is done by the WinBind daemon. WinBind is always necessary if you want to have a full-blown domain member, and also if you want to have a domain controller that is trusting other domains. Essentially, these two roles are very similar. I mean, what is a domain member really? It's a machine that has its local users. You always have a local administrator. So you have a local user database, but what a domain member in the Windows world does, it imports a complete user database from somewhere else. In the usual case, it does it from a domain controller. The domain controller exports the user database, and the Windows machine imports it. When you look at domain controllers that trust other domains, the job is very similar. I mean, the only difference between a domain member and a domain controller is that a domain controller exports as user database and announces some weird whatever NetBIOS names. There's not really much to it. So when you have a domain controller that trusts other domains, you need WinBind. And what happens is when somebody logs into this member machine using a domain account, you need to find Unix IDs. And these, by WinBind, are allocated from a range from whatever ID map backend module you just designed. We heard in the tutorial that we have, for example, the ID map ID, ID map read, and all other ways to allocate Unix IDs from Windows IDs. The other way around, when do we have to map Unix IDs to SIDs? The interesting places in the code are when we are a domain controller, somebody logs in to a Samba, domain, and the Windows workstation wants to see the ID of the user, not in the form of Unix IDs, but in the form of SIDs. So there we have to translate. How do we do that? The other place is when you open the security tab on a file, we have the owner, we have the owning group, and we have some members of the echo. We also have to translate those Unix IDs to Windows IDs because the get security descriptor call wants to see those IDs in the form of SIDs. How do we translate it? When looking at the Unix database, we know whether a particular whatever number, 1000, number 1001, we know if it's a user or if it's a group. What we do is, when we have to make a SID out of a user, we go to our passdb backend, which used to be our SMB password file, which is now, with more functionality, the TDB file or an LDAP backend. So we look at that, and when you look at the LDAP schema, when looking at the Samba SAM account, you have both the Samba SID of the user and the Unix ID, so there we have a map. When we know that we have to map a group to a SID, we are going to our netgroupmap database, which is, it's a bit difficult to use, but this is going to become much more important when going to 3023, so that's what I'm going to talk about in a minute, that we have an improved interface for that. So we're still talking about the task, map a Unix ID to Windows ID, and when both these fails, so for example, we have a Windows ACL, we have a Unix echo on a file, and we have to have we happen to have an entry that is neither in our Unix data, Unix user data, in the Windows Unix user database, nor in the group map. Then we did a fallback to a so-called algorithmic mapping. And what we did was, when having a user ID that we had to map to a RID, to a SID essentially, we're only talking about the last component of the security identifier. We took the UID, multiplied it by 2, and added 1000 to get to a RID. When we happen to map a group, we just added 1001. And this algorithmic fallback, that really caused problems, because just imagine that you have an explicit mapping somewhere, either in the passdb or in the group map, that happens to match also an algorithmic mapping, and whatever, somebody asks for the algorithmic mapping for some reason, you're really stuck, because that might have come from a different user or a different group. So collisions are really easy to generate using this scheme. What do we do with Samba 3023? This algorithmic mapping that essentially came from the old days when we had the SMB password file only. So before we designed, before we went to Samba 3.0, we only had support for the algorithmic mapping because we simply didn't have space in the SMB password file to really store an explicit relative identifier. That was basically the reason. And nobody really went in and extended the SMB password file, which could in theory have been done, but we just didn't. What we did in Samba 3.023 was we just removed this fallback to the algorithmic mapping. We, however, still need to translate users that we did not find in the passdb on the group map, users not in the passdb and groups not in the group map, we still have to translate that these entries into security identifiers. And one idea that we have been toying around, at least 2 or 3 years, is that we just have enough space in the security identifier space. So we have this 1521 dash and then the domain ID. We have 1532 and then the built-in IDs and so on. And when you look at this as 15, the 5 in all these security identifiers, that's the so-called issuing authority. And the 5 is the NT subsystem, when you look at Microsoft documentation. So, and what I just did is I invented a new number here, and I picked 22. It was just a nice number. I could have taken 6 or 9 or whatever. I just took a random one that I just used. Okay, this is the Samba authority. And what I did is I just need to have some, whatever, sequence of numbers to uniquely identify users. And this is the basic idea. We might, whatever, if Microsoft Red gets really nasty, as there's no security identifier around in the world that starts with S122. I mean, if Microsoft gets really nasty, they start using that. But I don't believe so. Because, I mean, how old is NT? It's more than 10 years old, and they haven't really exhausted the space. What they can do, I mean, what is a little known fact is that this space, when you look at the binary representation, this is not only 32 bits, this is 48 bits. And so there's just lots of space to really, whatever, expand yourself. If they just pick the 22, we know that they are against us. So we have a lot of space here. And what I did is, I took the S122/1, I just add the UID. Again, the task to solve is we have a UID that we don't have in our PassDB backend. We need to create a SID for it. We have a group ID that is not in our group database. We have to create a SID for it that is syntactically accepted by Windows. And we are the masters of these, and we have to translate those two names. And Windows will come back to us to ask for a name. Okay, who is S122/0? And we say it's root. And they're going to come back to us to ask, who is S122/2/500? And we say it's users. So it's completely up to us to really fill that space. I mean, this is not really an easy one because we're going to have upgrade issues. The reason, basically, why the fallback in particular for groups has been done is that when you log into a Samba domain controller, what does the Windows machine want to know at that moment? First, it wants to know the most important thing, did the user type in his password correctly? That's easy. Then, the Windows machine wants to know what's the security identifier of the user. Also easy. If we have an SMB password entry, we also know the SID. But then comes the tricky part. The Windows machine also wants to know the list of groups the user is in. And now imagine, where do we get this information from? Essentially, we get this information from etc group. So it's really the Unix database that dictates the list of groups that we have to inform the Windows client about. Imagine what happens when we log into a domain and we see a list of groups and we want to inform the Windows client about the list of groups. We end up, maybe because we didn't have an explicit mapping for these users, for these groups, we may end up with having to add these SIDs. And the real severe problem now is this doesn't work. Because when you look at the structure on the wire, you will see that the list of groups we have to, the format in which we have to inform the client about the list of groups is just relative identifiers. That's the main problem why you have this fallback. The relative identifiers, I mean, the user has a set S1521, random numbers, and then a relative identifier. The list of groups is also in S1521, the same list of random numbers, and then relative identifiers. So what we need is, we need a fallback that we have this algorithmic mapping to, and when we go to this scheme, the prefix just doesn't match anymore. And this is the basic problem with our upgrades, and we really have to educate our users about that, that when you rely on group memberships when logging into Windows machines that are members of a Samba domain, that you need explicit group at entries. Then at this point, it works. We don't do a fallback anymore. When we have the explicit entries in the net group map, then it would work. But then you don't have any collisions anymore. So, net group map. Net group map. Who of you has ever used the net group map? Jerry, you don't count. Who else has used the net group map? Okay. Pardon? Oh, really? Okay. Did you like the experience to use that? Okay. Did anybody really like that? I mean, what I say is, NetGroup Web and PDB Edit, our editor for the password deep backend, interfaces only the developer could love, or how did you phrase it, Jerry?
They are examples of how not to build an online interface.
Yeah, this is they are nasty. And when going to Samba 3.23, as I said, the NetGroup Map, the group map essentially is going to be more important, so we had to do something about that. And what we did is we created a new utility within our whatever kitchen sink utility net. We created a new subcommand netsam, and I'm going to show you that in a minute. What you can do is the important ones are net map Unix group. So you have your user database, and you want them to really show up in the token for the login to the Windows machines. And what you need to do is you need to add an explicit mapping to the same SID that you had before. So this is essentially what NetMap Unix Group is going to be for, that you get it read and that you then have a Unix group and create an explicit mapping in the NetGroup map for this Unix group. And then next, we're going to have better support for local groups. Local groups are essentially the Windows notion of nested groups. What we do there is we create a group mapping entry, we allocate a read, we allocate a group ID, and we just add that with a sane interface, I would say. What we then have is we have netsum set. Anybody who I can never remember the PDB edit options. I always have to type in PDB edit and have it print its own list of options to really figure out, oh, how did I set the whatever logon script of the user? I can never remember those, and that's why I created the netsum set that hopefully has a bit more intuitive user interface. And I'm going to show that in a minute. Yeah? Conceptually, they are the same. I mean, both are called, in Windows, both are called aliases. An alias is a list of security identifiers. And the difference between both is, I mean, the built-in group always has the prefix S1532 and then a relative identifier. For example, S1532545 is always users. So that's the local users. What's the domain, what's the local administrator? 544? Yeah. So this is always a well-known one. You can also have the same whatever type of object in the machine's user database with the normal machine SID. So you have also have local groups, same type of object, in S1521, whatever 3 96-bit digits, and then a relative identifier. Same type of object. You can also add complete security identifiers to the local groups. The only thing that is a difference between both is the SID prefix. And when you look at the type of object, they are absolutely the same. You would use the local groups when you want to create new ones. The built-in groups, that's a fixed set of groups. You always have the administrators, you have users, I think you have guests, you have power users, you have whatever. These are fixed. You cannot add or remove groups from the built-in database. We start out with an empty one, and you can only create built-in to a limited set of names. So we start off with an empty. I mean, anybody who has ever looked at NetGroupMap list with a TDB backend, we pre-fill the group mapping TDB with some entries that just map to nothing. This is not done anymore with 3.23, so you have to explicitly activate those. The administrators, the local administrator, the built-in administrators are created automatically, but that's it. All other ones you have to explicitly activate. So we might rename that to activate built-in group, whatever, but you don't really edit or create them. You can, however, do that. You can create new local groups with the machine SAN, which is separate on each domain member server. I mean, these local groups on domain members are kind of deprecated. This is exactly the reason. I mean, you will never be able to migrate files away from a file server that has local groups assigned as ACE entries, because these local groups are really whatever unique to that file server. So you need special migration tools that convert the ACLs to the new local groups on the new file server. That's the reason why Microsoft with Active Directory native mode has created these domain local groups. Same concept, you can nest groups, but they are all the same overall in the complete domain, because you just cannot migrate away from file servers that have local groups really in use. But we need to support that concept for, yeah, at least completeness. Yeah. You've already seen these slides. Yeah, local nested groups via WinBind. And what I'm going to show you is I have an empty Windows, an empty Samba machine here that I'm going to join to a Windows domain. And what I yesterday tried was this valid users equals group built in / users, and I hope it works as flawlessly as it did yesterday. This exactly never has worked without major fiddling before. So this is going to be the whatever demonstration part. How much time do I have? Yeah, 5 minutes, whatever. What? So what do I have? I'm afraid that's German, but I hope you get the idea. So I have my Windows 2003 machine here. And when you look at the name, it's WK2K3AD. And this is a completely native domain. And my host, actually, my VMware host, is my Samba machine here. I didn't use any pre-compiled packages, so please forgive me that the smb.conf is in a whatever unconventional path. So this is my basic smb.conf. I'm about to join. I'm not going to mess with ADS or LDAP at this point. I'm about to join my Windows 2003 machine with security equals domain. I have all these usual whatever IDMAP UID, all the WinBind, these two WinBind parameters. Very simple one. And this is essentially what I want to show you that actually works when having configured it properly. So I want to log in as a user that via some domain group membership is member of the built-in users here. And I want to see that this works while I change membership on the domain controller in some global group on the domain controller. So, step one, I have to join. Let me first check that I really shut down my daemons. Okay. Nothing running except VMware and some whatever externs. So, net join administrator. Oh, it tries ADS first, but essentially I have joint domain WK2K3AD. And I'm very happy that I tried it whatever yesterday, because I had a bad compile. It says signing not enabled. And what? I had to recompile it. You changed the client connection struct and some parameters were. Yeah, I recompiled and it worked. I would have been very surprised if this had happened here. So we joined, and now I'm simply gonna start WinBind. So WinBind is running. The basic test whether WinBind the join has worked is, as most of you might know, is wwinfo-t. If you want an even more basic test if WinBind is actually whatever running, use -p that does no network activity, it just pings WinBind over the normal communication path. So this succeeded. This actually says, okay, my trust relationship to the domain controller works. I can log in now. And what I want to do now is I want to create, or better, whatever, enable this group built-in users, and that's what I use my NetSam utility for. This NetSam utility has several subcommands. What I'm going to use is, first I'm going to do the create built-in group, and then I'm going to add some members, and after that I'm going to walk you through a bit of the additional commands. So first I have to activate my create built-in group, that's SAM create built-in group. No, SMBD, for this operation, I mean, WinBind needs to run. No WinBind running. And we need WinBind to run because what we do here when doing this create built-in group, we really, in the Unix sense, create a group. And what we have to do, this, I mean, these nested group things, Jerry has shown that we, on the fly, expand whatever members there. So what we really cannot do is we cannot have these nested groups in real in etc group. So what we do is we need WinBind to allocate a group ID for these users, for the built-in users. So when doing the create built-in group, we ask WinBind to allocate a group ID and have that map to the S1532/545. And I'm going to show you that. So I have to restart WinBind. So, and what I can now do is, okay, create a built-in group users with RID 545. And now let's look at the whatever basic utility, net group map list that nobody loves. And what, okay, let's kill WinBind again. Kill all. So what you see here is, this basically is the content of the database proper. So we have a mapping of the built-in user seed to the Unix group ID 10,000. And only via NSS WinBind, we see that we are mapping to built-in users, which itself is being done by WinBind. And this 10,000 is just the first group ID out of the WinBind git range. So this actually is allocated by WinBind. And it's the fact that we see the name here is also WinBind's fault. So this now is, yeah, really in the best Windows sense, or in the worst Windows sense, however you see it, the real built-in users group with a full Unix identity. Okay. Net. Sam. Add mem. And what we can add to the built-in users, and I have to type in 2 backslashes here for well-known reasons, what I can do is I can add a domain global group to that. So, and what I need to look up is, okay, I need to find a global group, and the one that comes in handy is the name the group with the name global, which is a domain global group. So what I can do here is say whatever global. So, and this is, I mean, who has used NetGroupMap before? You can do that with NetGroupMap utility, but you would have to look up all the seeds, and this is not really what you want to do. So now we can say netsam list mem users, and what we have is w2k3ad/global. So let's go to the domain controller and see who is a member of that. Members, nobody is a member of that. Let's try to log into the now, if you really want to log in, let's look at the smb.conf. The share is called temp. So that's always my favorite user, VL, password ASDF, it types so nicely. And it says, anti-status access denied, and watch this one. I typed in my password correctly, otherwise this line here wouldn't have shown up. I typed in my password correctly. It's really now a matter of the access control list on this share, which says only built-in users are allowed to access this share. So to enable this, I just add VL here, and I have to say apply, and hopefully magically it works now. And again, whoever has tried this before, this has never worked so flawlessly, and we hope that we can really maintain this stability for this, I think, very important feature in the future. Yeah, that's basically what I wanted to tell you. I have a last slide where it says contact or whatever. Questions and comments. Do you have any questions or comments? Yeah?
You said previously about the logon process and the language component.
Yeah?
So there are only words, so the user can be only the number of groups in the same way.
In the NT4 model, yes. What you have is when you look at the Windows 2000 and 2003 native domains, you can have two additional features. You have these domain local groups. So we have domain A, where the machine is member of. We have domain B, where the user is defined. So domain controller B defines the global group memberships. Via login, this goes to domain controller A that adds some domain local groups. So we have some additional SIDs there. That's one thing that is added, which we don't yet really support. We are still, whatever, trying to figure out what that really is. And the other case is the so-called SID history. Anybody ever known, ever tried whatever SID history is? So you migrate a domain from domain A to whatever, from a Windows NT machine to a Windows 2003 machine, and the problem you face is that all users get new identities. So you have an old file server, member of the old domain, and you want to migrate all the users from that old domain to a new domain, and the user will not be able to access the files on the old file server because he has only his old security identifier on the echo on the old file server. What Windows does is it simply adds a little attribute to the Active Directory directory and LDAP entry that says SID history. These are the SIDs that the user in the past has been using. And so when telling the workstation or the domain member server, this is the UID of the user. This is just a SID. And this is the groups the user is a member of. These are also just SIDs. One very big advantage that Windows has is you can't tell from looking at a SID whether this is a user or a group. So the SID history feature is the previous UID is being added to the list of groups. And this is the other way that you can have in the that you can have multiple domains in the user's token in the group list. We are still investigating this, how we can add it, if we need to add it. But so far we are in the NT4 model that we have that only global groups from the same domain can be member of the token. Okay. So, does it really answer the question, or? Okay. Great. Any other questions? Yeah? So the question is, if I add a user to the local administrators group, what kind of permissions does it get? That's always a question of who looks at it. I mean, so far for us, only SMBD really looks at it. And what is going on here? So far only SMBD looks at it. So any kind of privileges that SMBD is able to hand out to users via port 139 or port 55445, that's going to be given to that user. If you add WinBind, and can you map the local administrator to the root user?
Yes, I mean you can.
I mean using NS switch. So the only question is,
I mean, we can do anything. I'm not sure
if we want to. So you see, this is not yet fully discussed. We might want to talk about.
Well, there's several.
templates for root, except for those operations that SMDB is root on behalf of that user. Everything else in Linux administrators is just a normal group. So, you know, if you give the built-in administrators the ability to SU to root, then you know, you can just control it just as if it were real or anything else.
Yeah, the point is built-in administrators under Windows is a group that has special privileges. Under Unix, only the user root has special privileges.
Correct. So you would actually have to set up the additional privileges. Like, for example, if you wanted to allow a user to upload print drivers, you have to use the built-in administrators group to the file system.
Yeah.
That's, it's just a normal group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. That would, just add a list, add built-in administrators to etc sudoers, and yeah, that would probably be the best way. But there was another question in that call. Two questions. First question is, can I use these built-in groups on file system echoes? Yes, you can. It's a as we've seen, I killed WinBind and it showed up as 10,000, and this 10,000 is all that is stored in file system echoes. You can also do a change group on built-in use. I mean, I could just do it. Group whatever built-in users on whatever data TMP. What's in there? Touch data TMP blah. Come on. So we have built-in users as data as the only group. That works. This doesn't solve your power users. The second question was, can I use this mechanism to distribute the power users privilege to my workstations? No, you can't. Because the power user... I mean, the main difference between power users and local administrators is that upon domain join, a Windows workstation adds the domain administrators to the local administrators alias. It adds nothing on domain join to the local power users alias. So there's just no way to really add the privilege of local power users to a domain user without touching the workstation first. So the way would be to create, which it doesn't do by default, to create a domain power users, go through all to all the workstations, which you, by the way, could do with netrpc, whatever, group member add, go to all the workstations and add this domain group to the local power users alias. And then you're done. But this doesn't help. These new features don't help you in that respect. Whatever. Yeah, under Linux. The comment was that power users doesn't have any special meaning under Linux. It does under Windows. Any more questions? Okay, then I think we are pretty much done with the talks for today. Thanks for your attention.
Thank you very much.
You might want to use this here. Yeah. Ich glaube, das ist noch nicht an.
Yeah. All right, so thanks a lot to everyone who did a presentation here. We now have a short break to get fresh again, and we meet again, well, for those who want to join the party, at 5:45, which is about in 1 hour from now, in the lobby, to take a bus to the place where the social event takes place. So thank you, and well, see you later today or tomorrow.